the offside rule. We get it. Brought to you by a Wolves fan, a Manchester United fan, and a Liverpool fan.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Offside Rule podcast. It's myself, Lindsay Hooper, joined once more by Kate Paul. Say hello.
And Hayley McQueen.
Hello, both. This is what we're going to talk about today, girls, coming up. So topic two, we've started, so we'll finish. Or will we? An FA Trophy third round qualifying match was abandoned after 83 minutes. You might have seen this one. It was after I mentioned Colwyn Bay a few podcasts ago. It was actually to do with Colwyn Bay. They were losing 2-0 to Altrincham and they were offered a replacement referee. They refused. The game got abandoned. That's still been thrown out as to what's going to happen. But it made us think of examples of matches being abandoned from the history books. What was unusual about it? I want you to pick out one or two and tell me your favourite stories. Topic three today is fanatical followers. Now, I know that when I was away in Paris, you talked about loyalty from fans, but I want to go to a different degree and fans who just go too far. Did you have some fun with this one?
Yeah, I did. There are some wacko fans out there.
Tattoos are probably the best I've ever seen because they are so bad that they are so good. Mine aren't going to be tattoos because visually that probably wouldn't work. But if you're bored at home, after you've listened to us, just Google football fan tattoos. I think you may be in for a shock.
I'm talking about visuals on fans. You've only got to think of John FC Portsmouth, haven't you? That fantastic belly, the tats, the hats, everything else.
I must admit, when I was looking at this one, a couple that I'm not going to mention because of the visual value, but there was the... Did you see the tattoo of Ronaldo on someone's kneecap?
Ouch.
That looked very painful. On a kneecap, ouch. A tattoo. And also, in the Soccer Saturday fan zone, the one player that went a bit over the top, got his belly out and started molesting his co-commentator. You know, it was just really hilarious, but that was a video clip that I thought we'd save for another day. So fanatical followers, we'll find three stories and share those with you. Sean Thorne will have this week's Twitter topic of the week. And there is a theme, girls, this week, because I went to Regent's Park. I went to meet Matt Wolstenholme, who's one of the best football freestylers around. He broke a record. And he gave me a lesson in a park surrounded by lots of duck poo, but it was a beautiful day. So we're going to find out later how you think I got on. We'll put some pictures up and I'll also get some top tips for anyone wanting to do some footballing skills and tricks. You can try and copy Matt. And Sean will also have a few of the suggestions of your favourite players and their tricks. That was our Offside Rule Twitter topic of the week. Finally, we've got Kate Partridge this week with her Bundesliga roundup. And that's quite good timing then because England played Germany tonight. Myself and Kate going along and Hayley was at the Chile game.
I was. It was actually rubbish. And it was chilly. Not the opposition. I'm not just staying that that's who the opposition were. It was actually freezing and it wasn't the most exciting game.
Well, we'll go and enjoy that at Wembley tonight. Hopefully Germany won't humiliate us too much, especially with some of their reserves being in the squad. But who knows what will happen.
The female take on football.
So let's start off this week, girls, with our World Cup 11s. Now, let's just make sure that we set out the case here in the stalls that we actually don't know everyone who's qualified as we're recording this podcast. So there are some teams like Portugal and Sweden, for instance, that need to play it out. So you can't have Ronaldo, you can't have Ibrahimovic, and you can't have any of the France team because they might not be in Brazil next summer. So what I want you to do is create an 11 from the teams that have definitely qualified. You've got to pick from goalkeeper all the way through to your forwards. Hayley, you go first and let us know your formation as well.
I have gone for a German in goal, Manuel Neuer. He came into the German team just before the 2010 World Cup, hasn't looked back since. He is a hugely exciting talent, playing at the top of his game in Europe with Bayern Munich. They've dominated European football. It'll be interesting to see how he is on the world stage in Rio, but I think he's just at that perfect age as a goalkeeper. I know they say the older they get, the better they are, but I think for me, he's just at that right stage. At the moment, he's conceded just 13 goals in 27 matches in the Bundesliga.
I'm glad that you ran through all of those stats because you perfectly gleaned my point as well. Because I picked Manuel Neuer as well from Germany, so he's my goalkeeper. Have we got a trio? Is it all three of us have gone for the same?
No, I've gone for Iker Casillas. Just based on experience, you can't deny he is the world's best goalkeeper. And I know Neuer's coming through, but I've gone for a bit of reliability in that tournament situation. Iker Casillas, already a World Cup winner. He's done it before for me. He can do it again.
So but we know that myself and Hayley have gone for three at the back. Hayley, yours first. Have you gone for, I'm guessing you've just gone for a centre-back and right-back and left-back.
Yeah, I kind of have. I'd have liked Rafael Varane in there of Real Madrid. I've admired him quite a lot. And we mentioned him. Lindsay has him written down as well. Yeah. We've mentioned him in previous podcasts. He was one of my ones to watch last year. And I really like him. Big and strong. I've gone for Jordi Alba, right back. Plays for Barcelona. How can you not pick a Barcelona player? There are a couple in here for me. Standout performer of Euro 2012. Scored a goal in the final as well to cap off a wonderful tournament. I've got Vincent Kompany. Can't have a Belgian player missing from my team either, because I just think they're just a beautiful team to watch. One of the best defenders in world football. Strong, sturdy, experienced. Started life in midfield, but has a real reassuring presence with the ball at his feet. And I've also gone for Ashley Cole at left back. I'm going to stick with an English player. I prefer him to Leighton Baines. That's just my preference. I saw Baines playing against Chile and there were a couple of things that happened. I thought, don't think Ashley Cole would have let that happen. But anyway, there's much of a muchness between them. Leighton Baines looked like he wants to play in a band and should be at Glastonbury that summer, whereas Ashley Cole actually looks like he should be playing in a World Cup.
Well, you've answered my question about whether you would include an England player, because Hayley has already said yes. In the defence, there's Ashley Cole. I'm yet to have any. Because I've also got three, let me go through mine and then we'll pass over to Kate, who's got her sturdy four at the back. My left back is Marcelo. Brazil. I thought I'd go for a home side player. I went for Philipp Lahm, who's going to be directly in front of Neuer in goal. So I think for Germany, that's quite a nice partnership for them to have together. Also captain for Germany, a solid player. And as right back, Mattia Disgiglio for Italy. So I've gone for an Italian as right back, my only Italian in my squad. But he is very good. Kate Borsay.
So I've gone for a sturdy four at the back. And my first and only England player, I'm going to go for Leighton Baines. Now, it could be argued that Ashley Cole is more experienced, but stat-wise, Leighton Baines has the better run of it against Cole this season. His crosses are unbelievable, aren't they? Great in set pieces as well. I was looking at Marcelo as well, actually, but he makes a few too many positional mistakes for me. Baines can be susceptible against tricky wingers, fast ones especially, but I think he's really working on that part of his game this year, and I think by summer next year he will be the man for my left back. Centre back, I'm going for Gerard Pique. Tactical awareness, the ability to head the ball, Spanish player, used to winning World Cups, need I say more? My other centre back, like Hayley, I've gone for Vincent Kompany. Say no more. He's a leader, he's a giant, he's got the right mix of brute and sophistication for me. It might sound like a bit of a paradox, that, but he's the right mix for me. For my right back, he can play left back as well, Philipp Lahm. So like you, Lindsay, I've chosen him in my defence. Sturdy, German, his pass rate's 90%, the ultimate all-round defender for me.
Next up, midfield. So have you gone for you've gone for five, haven't you, Hayley?
So across my midfield, I have gone for James Rodriguez, who's sitting just in front of the midfield four, just behind two of my strikers. I wouldn't be surprised if we all have one of those forwards that is actually the same. But Rodriguez, an explosive forward, 21 years old, but is considered to be one of the biggest talents from South America. So he is one of the players to watch for Colombia, a team that have not actually qualified for the finals of the major tournament since 1998. So it's been a long time coming. The fact that it is in South America, we have seen the Chile players really rise to the occasion. And actually, I think a lot of them will surprise us, and it will be the South Americans on their home turf, used to the conditions, absolutely loving it, playing at their best. So Rodriguez is in there. I've got Marco Reus, a young player, come through the German production line yet again, a regular in the Dortmund team, and one of the German national side's biggest stars. Can't not have him in there. Steven Gerrard in midfield, because he's just at that right age. This is the last tournament he's ever going to play in. He's just towards the end of his career. He's had his peak. He's been there. But I think as an experienced head, you can't not have a side without Steven Gerrard in it. I'd like to see a player like him, who's achieved an awful lot in his career, but maybe underperformed on the world stage, as all of these England players have. But I think he as a player, don't agree with Sir Alex's comments about the fact that he isn't a world-class player. And I'd like to show him Sir Alex that he's actually wrong and have a really good World Cup next summer. And England do very well. Scotland haven't qualified, so none of those players in there. Sorry about that. Also in the midfield, I've got Shaqiri, who's Yugoslavian-born, plies his trade in Germany for Bayern Munich, but actually represents Switzerland. Now, they're the seventh-best team in the FIFA rankings, so I think they could be a side to watch. He's a tiny little winger, but gained much admiration throughout Europe for his performances in the Champions League with Basel, and then, of course, he earned the high-profile move across to Germany and Iniesta. How can we not have a Barcelona player in there? So I have Iniesta playing just behind a fellow Barcelona player. He's won everything in the game over recent years. And I think somebody like him who can literally change a game, a playmaker, he saves his best for the big occasions as well. I think he's going to have a really exciting World Cup year. So that's my midfield. That is how he's looking at the moment.
Well, like you, because I've gone 3-5-2, I've decided to go for a defensive midfielder, someone that can back up my three defenders. And that's going to be Dante from Brazil. So I've gone for another home side team. I also join you with Iniesta out on the right flank. I was thinking Xavi or Iniesta. I think Iniesta just has the edge for me. Schweinsteiger, Germany, I've really enjoyed watching him and I'm thinking that he'll have a good tournament. I went for Cheick Tiote from the Ivory Coast, also in my midfield. And then out on my left wing, I was thinking, well, who am I going to put down there? So my gut reaction is to go for Eden Hazard and have a Belgian player in there because I haven't got any and I do think Belgium will be one of the surprise packages. However, because I have no England players up front, I think I might swap Hazard for Rooney and have him and have Rooney playing off my two strikers and doing a little bit what you're doing. So having sort of this diamond in midfield, really. That is what I'm going to do just to stick to my roots and have an England player in there. So I've got to go Wayne Rooney, which means Eden Hazard is on the bench. Kate Borsay, who is in your midfield?
Thanks, Hoops. I've got a solid three here. Also, I've gone for Marco Reus, Borussia Dortmund, Germany. Great control, fantastic passer. He can score anywhere within side that 30-yard area. I would have had Ribéry or Ronaldo, of course, but they've been banned from this criteria. Central midfield, I've gone for Iniesta, Barcelona.
That's a hat-trick of Iniesta's.
Oh, yes. In fact, we've all gone for Iniesta, that's true. All-round greatness. I've just written there, all-round greatness. Need I say more? On my right wing, Arjen Robben. How could I not go for him? You know, I've got a couple of Dutch players in my team, and I think that their performance in the final of the World Cup in 2010 will make them want to avenge for that. They don't need to play dirty. They've got enough skill, enough technical skill in their team to not have to play dirty, and that was the mistake that they meant, which meant that quite a few fans turned against them after the last World Cup final, actually. Robin's come in there. The key to Bayern Munich's success, really, in the Champions League last season, so I had to go with him.
And so now we look at who's going to get our goals for us in our World Cup fantasy squad that we're choosing here. I can't see past my front two, so you're going to have to really give me some convincing here if you've got anything different. Because for me, Falcao, Colombia, teamed with Lionel Messi, Argentina. There would be no stopping. That is, for me, the pair that you want up front. Have you got the same or have you got anything different?
I also have Messi. Again, how could you not have Lionel Messi? And I think playing just in front as well of Iniesta, they will obviously link up very nicely because they play together every week, obviously. Balotelli is in there for me because I just want some front page headlines as well as the back page headlines. I want somebody to detract away from all the rest of the players so that they can just get on with the job and he can cope with the pressure. He can cope with the madness and we'll just focus that all on him. And I think he will absolutely rise to the occasion. Can you imagine? He's probably just sitting at home like just, you know, fueling up, bursting, thinking, this is, my whole life is built around a World Cup. I am Balotelli and I am meant to be playing in a World Cup. It's going to be like an explosive of one giant firework in Rio next summer. That's what's going to happen.
I was about to mention fireworks. And seeing as our wags are pared down a bit now, it's all gone a bit muted with the wags, haven't we? Who else do we need apart from Fanny Balotelli's wag there to lead the line for those wag headlines?
Exactly. She is one interesting lady. Lindsay.
Okay, well, Kate, you know that we've both gone for Messi. Have you made it a hat trick? Is it the only player, apart from Iniesta, that we've got that's all three of us?
Well, I had a real... I had four to choose from for my front line, and I've taken Messi out. Now, I know that there's a mutual gasp of horror amongst not only us here in the studio, but also the guys listening at home. But just for Japes, all right? Okay. Just for Japes. He's injured at the moment. He's struggling with his injury. I don't get a great feeling about him at next year's World Cup. Don't ask me why, I just don't. So, my front three, because there are so many wonderful attacking options to choose from, aren't there? I've gone for Van Persie. Amazing season for Manchester United. One of the best strikers in the world and hungry for international success in the right way, as I mentioned before, with the Dutch performance from 2010. Falcao I've put there before. It's now known as the golden generation of Colombian football. I know you've both spoken about him already, so he's in. And Aguero. He's having such a fantastic season for Manchester City. I've decided to plump for him and go for it.
Okay. I actually think, contrary to you, I think Messi, after this injury, I think because he's been overworked, hasn't he? They never let him recover from this injury, which has sort of been this niggle that's been ongoing at Barcelona. But I think this is the one thing that he's waiting for, is the World Cup. Yeah. I think it's the one thing to add to that glitterati of spectacular mantelpiece wear. And I think he will probably be integral to Argentina getting beyond semi-finals.
You do worry about the European sides, don't you, of course, when there are so many. Most of these players are playing in the Champions League, and it's such a big season yet again in Champions League football that you just kind of worry, like, there will be a little bit of burnout.
Yeah. At least two or three of our selections will not be at the World Cup, or will be injury doubts for the World Cup, because percentage-wise, that is what's going to happen. You may not see a Pique, you may not see a Messi, you may not see an Iniesta. Who knows? Yes, of course, we all want these guys there, but a couple of them aren't going to make it, are they?
I think Messi will be there, though. I think that's why he's resting now. That's why they're going to get him right. Get him right. We'll move on to topic number two, which I very, very imaginatively called, "We've started, so we'll finish." Or will we? hopefully it gave something away. So the FA Trophy third round match that was abandoned after 83 minutes, the referee got injured, Colwyn Bay refused a replacement referee. This was against Altrincham. It inspired us to think about examples of matches being abandoned from the history books of football. What was unusual about it and what were the implications maybe? So starting with Hayley.
We're about to apparently enter the coldest winter that we've had in record since the 1800s sometime. So yeah, really looking forward to this. The braking strap is going to be ticking like you've never seen it tick before on Sky Sports News, with frozen pitches and goodness knows what and abandoned games. In 1998, a game in South Africa where you wouldn't expect there to be trouble with the weather. And a game between Morocco Swallows and Jomo Cosmos, there was a huge lightning and thunderstorm.
Dramatic.
Yes, very dramatic. You think, oh, a bit of lightning, that's fine, play on, wait till it's settled down. Well, actually, no. Players and supporters from both sides were literally moved, fell to the ground, and two of the Swallows players were actually in hospital overnight with their injuries from the lightning. Obviously, the game was abandoned. They were pretty lucky, though.
Aren't Swallows supposed to move east in bad weather or something?
Apparently, so, yeah. That was a terrible joke, but they were okay and they survived, so we can joke. No joking matter, though. In the same year, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, again, another weather-hit game between Bene Tashadi and Basanga in the eastern province of Kasai, just to get those facts out there properly. It really sadly actually did end in tragedy. Lightning killed 11 players. Lightning struck and they continued to play on for a short while. More lightning came down. 30 other people were actually seriously injured. So it's really sad when this does actually happen. It doesn't make you realise, if you do see a bit of a storm and referees are taking the players off and we're all moaning as spectators, oh, it's just a bit of a storm, that actually this has happened before, and sadly there have been fatalities. So I know that's a bit of a sad story, and normally we would like to have a bit of jovial fun with this, but when football is life and death, this is what the life and death situation is. So that's really sad there. So be careful if you're out there this winter and there's lightning and snow and everything else.
Kate Borsay, you're up next.
Well, my mind wandered to a story that I read at the beginning of the week. It happened last week, actually. A couple of Italian third-tier sides, both from the south of Italy, actually. The match was called off after the visiting side, which was Nocerina, had allegedly received death threats from their own fans. There was lots that's not known about this, really, and lots of stuff behind the scenes, which you may have to leave to your own imagination. But the game started 40 minutes late because of the controversy. Nocciolino made their three permitted subs in the first 2 minutes of the game. So already something not quite right there. In the next 20 minutes, five of their players went off injured, leaving the team with six players below the minimum needed to complete the game. Quite what was going on there, I've no idea. The Italian media said that the Nocciolino players, and they were playing Salernitana, by the way, the Italian media said that the players had received death threats from the club's fans and had not wanted to play at all, hence really making sure that the game didn't go ahead. They'd been persuaded to take to the field by security officials. The Nocciolino fans had been banned from attending the game, but ultimately it looks like the side just did not want that match to go ahead.
This one is from earlier this season, and it's one that Faye Carruthers, who does our Twitter topic of the week sometimes, will recall, because it was her first reporting match for Final Score. It was Charlton and Doncaster at the Valley. Now, the problem with the Valley is it is prone to a waterlogged pitch, and that's what happened in this instance. Now, Doncaster were the, of course, visiting side, and they were 3-1 up when the game was abandoned, so I can imagine that they were furious. I actually thought I was going to have an abandoned match there myself with the Leeds game. It was postponed by 30 minutes. But it was the heavy rain, and they really need to do something about the pitch and how they get it drained. But what I would say was that the ground staff, since that match earlier in August this year, have made sure when it is really bad weather, they're out there from the beginning of a Saturday morning making sure they're clearing the water away, and they do keep the matches on at the moment.
I live on the Charlton slopes, and so it's those slopes' fault that the slope ends at a roundabout the valley, hence it's called the valley. So yeah, so it's my road's fault basically.
Your road?
Yeah.
Were you washing your car that morning?
Yeah, exactly, loads and loads of water. I just stood out there with my hose. I did not want the match to go ahead.
And my other one, I've done a Hayley McQueen, because Hayley does this sometimes when I do the topics and you skew it, and I like it when you do that. So
liberties.
So I've done that because I think this is a game that should have been abandoned but wasn't, and it's all around a drunken referee. Now, before coming in to record this, I had to show you both the video. So you need to tell our listeners exactly how drunk this referee was.
He was drunker than probably Balotelli after winning a World Cup final at about 5 a.m. if he drinks. I presume he probably likes a little tipple.
He was so drunk, he was at a 45-degree angle, but still remaining standing.
This is in a Belarusian league. So what we'll do is we'll make the YouTube clip available. It did become quite famous. It's quite a long clip, and you see the fans sort of jeering at him. He also, the thing that I love about this clip is how he tries to make out it's a bit of back pain.
Yeah, he's literally swaying forward and back. He can't stand up straight. So instead of kind of putting his hands out to sort of help with the balance, he sort of grasps his hands on his back as if his back is hurting him, and really he's just propping himself up from behind.
He also, a couple of stewards are trying to get him off the pitch. He's so drunk, he's walking backwards, probably thinking that makes perfect sense. Why walk off the pitch forwards when you can walk backwards?
The referee in question was Sergei Smolik. I think that's how you pronounce his name. But he had really great credentials. So he was actually the referee who officiated England's 6-0 win over Luxembourg at Wembley in 1999.
Brilliant.
And he was also voted as Belarus's finest in 2007. So the fact that
Belarus's finest drinker.
Finest drinker, I think, yeah. You see him sort of staggering around the centre circle. He failed to keep up with play, apparently, throughout the whole match. He refused to issue any cards whatsoever for anything, even the most tastiest of tackles. The Belarus FA actually had to issue a statement afterwards and said that they claimed his strange performance was due in part to his bad back rather than a bad pint. But he obviously doesn't have a bad back. We will show you this video. We'll make it available via our Twitter account at Offside Rule Pod. We'll put it on Facebook and on the website.
Imagine, like, when you do have an injury and you're taking probably medication. Maybe he always has a little drink before he heads out onto the pitch, and it's completely affected him because of the medication. He's just gone nuts.
Yes. So he should have been in a game that was abandoned, but unfortunately it wasn't. We're going to take a break now and get an update on all things Twitter topic of the week from Sean Thorne. This ties in, girls, with me having this football freestyling lesson from Matt Wolstenholme. So we'll hear of people's favourite skills, their favourite players and the sort of tricks that we've seen up and down the leagues over the years. Get that from him, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about a few tips from Matt.
Twitter topic of the week.
So it's been a week of skills and fancy footwork. Lindsay's got to hang out with football freestyler Matt Wolstenholme, and a very cheeky training grand goal from Ravel Morrison has got us talking about football skill all week. So we've asked you guys to tell us about some of your favourite moments of footballing skill. Holly Cockbill's been on. She tried to recreate one of Everton forward Tony Duggan's goals, but apparently she failed epically. Now, Tony Duggan, she's notorious for cracking out bits of skill. One of her goals last year, I think it got goal of the month. It was against Doncaster and it was particularly cheeky. Now, Sam Newton suggested checking out Kerlon's seal dribble, called a seal dribble, as he's juggling the ball on his nose. Now, I looked up a few videos of Kerlon on YouTube and it's amazing stuff. It's like being back at SeaWorld Orlando. The thing is, all the Kerlon videos were all uploaded like 7 years ago, all saying, remember this name, he's going to be the next Ronaldinho, he's going to be awesome, yada yada yada. And as Sam tells us, he's now playing in Japan's third division. Makes you wonder what went wrong for Kerlon. Miguel has picked Roberto Carlos, scoring a seemingly impossible goal from a corner. He sent us the video as well. The player who displayed the best piece of skill was an easy pick for Chris Horrocks, as he's casually nominated his 12-year-old self. Little 12-year-old Chris, as a mascot for Brentford at Burnley, majestically controlled a lofted pass down with the outside of his boot. That's Chris's words, which apparently led to Turf Moor erupting with applause. And I'm hoping that that's a story that ends with Chris being offered a cheeky little spot on the bench, coming on the 90th minute and scoring a header for the winner. Carlos Rust, in reply to the Ravel Morrison back heel video, he said he saw Gianfranco Zola do the same thing against Norwich at the Bridge. Hashtag in a match, not in training. And he certainly did. It was in the FA Cup third round replay in 2002, I think. It was from a Graham Lasso corner and Chelsea went on to win the game 4-0. Now, if you want to know my choice, which is a nonsense bit of skill from a Bristol City youth game, it's going to be on the Offside Rule Twitter, which is at Offside Rule Pod. Give it a follow, and maybe Linz will pop up a video showing off some of the skills she learnt with Matt Wolstenholme. I'm Sean Thorne, and I'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you very much for that, Sean. And whilst I was at Regent's Park, girls, I will put some of the photos from this football freestyling lesson online on our website and on the Facebook page. I managed to have a quick chat with Matt, so he's got a few tips for any listeners who want to try out some silky skills. By the way, what did you think of what I managed to do?
It was very impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty impressive, actually. Considering there was so much duck poo to avoid, I thought you were very light on your feet. Yeah, very good.
Thank you. I thought the heel flick. So I managed to do the heel flick. I'll try and get a video of this as well that we'll put on the website over the course of the next couple of weeks. We've just got to find the time to make it. So we got some clips of videos. The head stall I did, the neck stall I did. I did okay on the around the world, but I didn't complete it. I managed to sort of do a half around the world. That was really difficult and it really hurt my hip.
Well, your number one aim was to do around the world. And I almost texted you to go, did you do a Lisa? And I thought she'll never get that.
A Lisa?
A Lisa Stansfield of being around the world and aye.
I wasn't expecting a like 90s throwback. Is that 80s, 90s?
90s.
90s. You're both looking clueless, which again cements the fact that I'm old.
No. Older, not old.
I'm Joe Hart.
Joe Hart.
I'm Fraser Foster. Fraser Foster.
You're listening to the Offside Rule.
We get it.
I'm joined by Matt Wolstenholme, who's a football freestyler, and we've just been at Regent's Park and you've been showing me the ropes. Thank you for doing that, first of all.
Oh, no problem at all. I'm happy.
As a tutee, how did I fare?
I was really impressed. Yeah. I mean, to start with, we just had you doing a few keepy uppies, right? And we had, three or four consecutively. And after about how long we've been here, half an hour, 45 minutes, you've done 15 and you've done a few tricks and flicks. So I'm really impressed. Yeah, I think you did well.
I'm a bit disappointed, but I always was going to be, because I wanted to nail that around the world and I didn't quite manage it. I sort of did a half. But for anyone who's listening and who loves doing tricks and will know you from your YouTube videos, mattfreestyle.co.uk, you can go and get some more. Just a few tips for people over Christmas. If they get a new football, some new boots and want to come down Regent's Park, I don't suggest coming to the bit where the ducks are by the lake. It's very pooey. But if you do manage to have a go, let's start with the head stall. What would be your top tip for accomplishing that one?
Well, as we did when we first started, just grab the ball with your hands, pop it on your head and try and balance it first off, and then when you feel comfortable and you kind of move around with it a little bit and you can hold it for a few seconds, then try and chuck it up and hold it from there. So it's gradually progress it. Don't beat yourself up if you can't do it first off, because it's quite a difficult skill and it takes a lot of practice. So just keep on doing it and over and over again.
So there you are, Hayley Kate, girls. Charles, I hope you're listening. I had a go. Out of 10?
I'll give you a 9, definitely, yeah.
Oh, that's very generous. That is very generous, a 9. I was thinking 6, 7. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Let's go on to topic number 3, girls. We've got lots of these to get through. Fanatical followers. We are asking for fans that have gone a bit too far, a little bit wacky-dacky, crazy, whatever you want to call them. Maybe up to 3 stories each, but we do need to be quick. So, Hayley McQueen.
Here we go. There was a Burnley fan who had 7 children. His final child, a son, he decided to name after the entire Claret's first team. This fan's son is Jensen J, Alexander Bikey, Carlisle Duff, Elliot Fox, Iwolumo Marnie, Mears Patterson Thompson, Wallace Preston.
Wow.
That is a fan.
Can I just say, poor child.
Imagine having to fill out your forms when you're going for a passport or a new change of address. Oh my, I can't even bear to think about it. So he's just one fan who has lots of children. Here is one fan who's very much on his own, doesn't have any friends. He went to a game on his own. He was the only football fan, as an away fan, to attend a game and became a celebrity from it. He attended Udinese's match at Sampdoria, Arrigo Brovedani, the only fan to turn up. He happened to be in Genoa on business. He'd actually orchestrated it so that he would be where the team were when they were playing, thinking that other fans would turn up to go and see the team. But no, he was so loyal, he made it there. In the end, the whole of the home support clapped him. The team invited him in for coffee and a meal, the team that he supported, and the club manager even gave him a shirt. Udinese won 2-0. What about this football fan that has collected something that has cost him an absolute fortune and probably cost him future relationships? Don't know if this guy is in a relationship, but it's slightly worrying me. He's called Craig Robinson. He's 27. He bought one of the little figures in 1995 of Alan Shearer. They are Corinthian figures. They are the tiny little miniature figures that look like actual footballers. He owns every single one of them. 5,000 miniature figures. Where does he keep them? A room with terraces in it. Actual shelves, just like terraces, and he has wall-to-wall figures. The final player that he needed for his collection was former Arsenal star Stefan Schwartz. He bought it on eBay last year, completed his collection. It was valued in 2008 and now worth a staggering £25,000. So there you have it. He's just in love with these figures. I don't know what he's going to do with them, but you do slightly worry if you've got guests over. They're sleeping in a bed with 5,000 tiny, mini little footballers looking at you from the terraces on the wall.
Kate. Okay, fanatical followers. Talking about terraces, Stephen Ireland signed for Manchester City as a youth player, was there for quite a long time, until 2010 actually, left in his mid-20s. I remember reading, and I don't have any evidence of this, but I promise it's true. I remember reading an OK magazine article, don't ask why, folks, it was an old job, where it basically was an at-home with him. Now, this wasn't the one where he had that expensive fish tank. This was one previous to that, when he was still at Manchester City. He decked one of his son's bedrooms. It would have been Jacob or Joshua, whichever is the older one. He decked it out like what is now the Etihad. So he had literally fans on all 4 walls, and the bedroom carpet was the pitch. Yeah. There was a bench for the bed. There was a big shirt thing there as well with Ireland written on the back and Stephen Ireland's number. It was literally like walking into a mini Etihad.
Did he give his children a shrine to himself?
Kind of, yes. This is Stephen Ireland that we're talking about, God bless him. It was basically like a mini Etihad. I suppose that's a nice idea. Not if you leave in 2010 to go to Aston Villa, though, is it? Not necessarily the best idea in the world. An Arsenal fan lost his house after betting that Arsenal would beat Manchester United a couple of weekends ago. Henry Darbasani, who's got 3 wives and 5 children, by the way, from Uganda, made a bet with his friend Rashid Yiga that Arsenal would beat Manchester United. The price of the wager, well, Darbasani put his family home on the line for that wager, whilst Yiga staked his Toyota Premio car plus his wife. Ooh. High stakes, by the way, guys.
But surely Darbasani has enough wives already. He doesn't need another one, does he?
Why have 3 when you can have 4? The wager was put in writing by the pair. They were so serious. Apparently it was witnessed by community leaders in their town. down. The Ugandan Observer reported that following the match, which Arsenal lost 1-0, a group of Manchester United fans stormed Darbassani's house, kicked his wives and children out of their home. This is extreme fanism. Pretty harsh, that one.
Well, I need to interject there because you've got a betting story that went disastrously wrong, where a fan went to extreme lengths, lost his home, maybe a wife. I don't know what on earth that was all about. I've got someone who has such a good footballing brain and sporting knowledge that not only once, but twice made an immense amount of money through being extreme to that degree. So in 2001, a man from Lichfield in Staffordshire put down a 30 pence stake, and he predicted the champions of the top five English leagues, as well as the three lowest Scottish divisions. He also got the Rugby Union Premiership right, NatWest Trophy, the County Cricket Championship, and three English and Scottish football matches taking place in August. Wow. He netted from 30 pence over £500,000. Not only that, just to prove that he wasn't a fluker, he didn't just do it once. He then later on, in another year, put down another bet, this time £2.50, that netted him £157,000. This man is a very good bettor.
That's like accumulator-tastic, isn't
yeah.
it?
Jeff Stelling, be careful. There's a stats man who is earning money.
Mm.
Yeah. My third story involves Manchester City. Now, Karen Bell is a Manchester City wife. Well, she's and her husband, her now husband, are both fanatical Manchester City followers. They decided to get married 4 weeks before they set the date. The date happened to be the same day as a Manchester City match. So they thought, OK, well, we'll have the ceremony and then we'll turn up for the City match. They were playing Stoke. City won the game, so that was all great. But beforehand, because it was a City game, her husband joked that she should wear a City shirt instead of a bridal dress because it would be more fitting. She didn't just wear a City shirt, she went the extra mile. He had a suitcase full of old vintage Manchester City shirts in the loft. He gave them to her to choose one. She didn't choose one. She cut them all up and chose several and made herself a wedding dress out of them. I'm going to put the pictures up, folks, because it is quite stupendous.
Wow.
So here's this bride, Karen Bell, made a lovely bridal dress, actually, out of Manchester City shirt. She said she wanted to do something a little bit different because they'd both been married before. She said it was a labour of love. She was at the sewing machine 6 nights a week, but it definitely paid off. She said that when they headed to the game after the ceremony, it was brilliant. Everyone was buying them drinks. She said that the dress ended up looking so good that someone came over to her in the bar at the game and asked if it had been designed by Vivienne Westwood.
Do you know what? That is perfect because it's old, it's new, it's borrowed, it's definitely blue.
Absolutely. There we go.
So I'm going to start with a 30-yard free kick, one that goes down in the history books, people remember, and we sort of hero worship Roberto Carlos as a result. So it was a free kick against France that you probably recall from 1997. Of course you know the one I'm talking about. Well, it's one thing admiring it, isn't it? That takes it to one degree. But how about a team of scientists who sit down and were so baffled by what Carlos managed to do that they then went through a few different members of staff, a physicist, a team, another few special dedicated people, and managed to develop an equation to explain it. So yes, this has a mathematical explanation, how he managed to score that 30-yard free kick in 1997. That's taking it a little far, though, do you not think?
I can just imagine those scientists, the degree of the curvature on that angle, do you know what I mean? Of proper geeks.
Well, when the boot hit the end of the ball at a 36-degree angle at 39 miles an hour.
Yeah, I think it's X over Y plus Z equals...
Goal.
Goal. Yes.
And then another one, which people probably heard quite recently because Harry Redknapp had his book out. And as a result of him doing lots of media interviews, one of the ones that I saw, he brought up this story again. And it's a pretty famous one. The fact that he had a fan that was badgering him when he was West Ham manager, saying that he could do a better job than the players and you should let him on. And this guy, his name was Steve Davis. And in this case, Harry Redknapp turns around and says, OK, then go and get your shirt on. And this fan's looking really like, what? Not only does he end up going on, because he was given abuse, it was actually to the striker Lee Chapman, I think. So Lee Chapman was bought off. Harry Redknapp turned to this enraged fan and said, OK, go on, suit up. off he goes, off he trots. And then he turned out for West Ham in a pre-season friendly against Oxford as a result. He got a full half an hour to make his mark. He scored.
No way.
He managed to score for them. Kate Partridge, here's your chance to have your say with their Bundesliga roundup.
The female take on football.
Hi all. Well, while England's press focused on Tuesday's friendly at Wembley, Germany's media is more excited about Saturday's Der Klassiker at Dortmund between Borussia and Bayern, the first encounter between the Bundesliga's top two since May's Champions League final at Wembley. I think Dortmund are Munich's biggest threat in Europe, said Ottmar Hitzfeld, the coach who led both sides to Champions League glory. Not Real Madrid or Barcelona, he added. Let's see. In the past 3 years, Dortmund have claimed back-to-back league titles and a domestic double by walloping Bayern in the cup, only for the Bavarians to reply with a unique European treble, which means the two have emerged as Germany's version of, well, Real and Barca. Saturday's showdown is also a pivotal six-pointer. Victory for Bayern puts them 7 points clear. A win for Dortmund moves them to within a point. It'd also do third-place Bayer Leverkusen a favour. Sami Hupia's charges hoping to keep the title race a three-horser with victory at Hertha Berlin. Well, the mouth-watering matchup also comes after Bayern made yet more history, trouncing Augsburg to break Hamburg's 30-year-old record and become the first Bundesliga team to record 37 consecutive unbeaten games. And they're in the last 16 of the Champions League, vying to be the first team to successfully defend their crown since Milan in 1990. Top that! Dortmund and Leverkusen are trying to. Borussia versus Bayern, Jurgen Klopp against Pep Guardiola, Europe's top two. Classic.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to this week's podcast. Make sure you download on Thursdays. We're out every single Thursday. We're going to have 1 week off over Christmas, we decided earlier.
We are. Yes, if you go to the website, offsiderulepodcast.com, you'll be able to see footage. We're going to try and put some video footage up there as well, aren't we, of Lindsay's freestyle football skills lesson from Matt Wolstenholme.
Yes, thanks for that reminder, because I should thank Matt very much for coming down to Regent's Park and giving up his time. If you want to see his silky skills, he was very good, girls. Matt freestyle.co.uk for his website. We've put a video already on our Facebook page showing him doing the breaking a world record. He's very, very good. Thank you very much, and thanks for this week. I'm not here next week.
Boo.
So we've got a mystery guest, i.e. we're just booking someone now.
I'll let you go and book. Bye.
The Offside Rule. We get it. Brought to you by a Wolves fan, a Manchester United fan, and a Liverpool fan.